air traffic controllers are controlling. We forecast in the business models for small UAS could be an order of magnitude or two orders of magnitude greater than that. And the air traffic paradigm right now simply doesn't scale to accommodate that kind of complexity. So kind of leveraging our experience in developing automation for air traffic management, we've been developing a system that we call UAS Traffic Management, or UTM, and looking at a much more online, automated, real-time system that can scale with the growth in the number of UAS that are looking for access to the airspace. And the point of this is to allow the users to engage in the negotiation and operation of the UAS in their system, and to prove it step by step as we go so that we have a safe, reliable, effective system. And so we originally envisioned kind of four major steps in this path to defining a UAS traffic management system. And we've already completed two of those. One was just simply to show that flight plans could be registered into a server from multiple users geographically separated, that they could be used to schedule the flights and ensure that there were no conflicts. And so the basic concept was validated about 2 years ago. Last year, we took the next step, and within the FAA's UAS test sites, six of them around the country, we operated beyond visual line of sight UAS operations, and showed that the system could maintain contact and communication and coordination with those aircraft, and that we could safely interoperate with multiple users. Coming up in the near future then, next year, we're going to actually start looking at conflict detection and separation assurance for small UAS, which will then ensure that all of the operations can proceed, and even in off-nominal conditions, we can have a safe airspace. And ultimately, we want to show how services can be provided that UAS operators will need, such as terrain avoidance, geofencing so that they stay within defined areas, and the ability to modify their mission in progress and adapt the entire airspace to it. So we've accomplished a lot. We've got a lot more to do, but we have over 80 partners in the UAS industry who are enthusiastically joining us in doing this because they see that this is the way to get the airspace open for them to operate.
Great, thank you. Dave, what are we doing in testing?
At Armstrong, we've operated UAVs and unmanned aircraft since there were unmanned aircraft. Today, we operate the large UAVs, the Global Hawk RQ-4s and Predator-class MQ-9 aircraft. And our center is the lead center coordinating the efforts of all four of our centers in the UAS and the NAS project to do what Tom is talking about, to clear or to allow file and fly UAVs in the National Airspace System. Part of it is policy, getting the FAA and the piloting community to understand and trust what unmanned aircraft are doing with the geofencing and collision avoidance. The initial guidance we got from the FAA was that a UAV had to have pilot equivalent abilities to see and avoid is one objective. And it's hard even to define what pilot equivalent means to an audience full of pilots here. What does any individual see, or what can you avoid is really determined by you. But the FAA is okay with you flying. In a lot of ways, a sensor system can see traffic a lot better than you and able to communicate a lot better than a human eyeball or pair of eyeballs can. And so our goal at the center is to integrate the work, the sense and avoid technologies being developed by industry, by the four NASA centers, the communications networks, and develop a minimum operating policy and procedures for FAA to incorporate into policy, give guidelines to avionics builders, give the general aviation community and the piloting community in general the trust that we can file and fly unmanned aircraft with traffic. We've had great luck flying our Predators and Global Hawks in throughout the UAS in the country with certificates of authorizations, COAs, with the FAA, but we need to get to a more routine operations of file and fly to open the market for unmanned aircraft to do more things like package delivery, horizontal infrastructure inspection, firefighting, traffic or guidance to ground firefighters and so forth. So there's a big market for unmanned aircraft technology, and together I think we can help make you, the piloting community, comfortable that what we're doing is keeping you safe and keeping your airport safe and keeping the community safe.
Great, thank you, David. Janet?
Yeah, I think a lot of Glenn's contributions for communications has come from the legacy of space communications. We're one of the leaders of space communications throughout the history, using radio frequency, and now we're looking more into optical communication, a combination of using the best of both worlds. We don't want to use optical comm for general aviation just yet, but learning all those lessons that we've taken from that. If any of you remember flying TACAN approaches and things like now, and using our satellite abilities now, we know exactly, you know, with triangulation where we are, use GPS, you can fly GPS approaches now. And if you flew the earlier ones before and now you fly a GPS approach, you can really appreciate the advancement that has happened by using advanced communications, so you know exactly your positioning with respect to the ground. And now if we're adding all this other ability where we can, our aircraft can see all the other aircraft and the sense and avoid, it's gonna make air traffic so much safer in the future. We're dealing with a lot of universities as well. We go out and I was at the University of Washington a couple of weeks ago. I was just amazed at the students who are working on their advanced degrees and what they can do in a very small laboratory with a couple of little small quadcopters and little targets, and they teach these quadcopters, this little small thing you can get off the shelf, how to sense and avoid with some amazing lines of code that they just sit there and work on their own. And to bring those folks into NASA, those are the kinds of people that we're looking for to come and help us advance these communications technologies.
Great. What's going on at Langley, Dave?
Yeah, a lot of the same things. And this is probably one area, and in general, we all,
for their aero centers, work very well together, but this is probably one area where we really are very closely tied. UAS and the NAS working very closely with Armstrong for the bigger UAVs and detect and avoid algorithms. And then as you go down to the smaller classes of vehicles, a lot of these vehicle-to-vehicle kind of communication technologies that Janet was talking about, but the algorithms, the sense and avoid, the contingency management, if something goes wrong, how do you teach the thing? So a lot of it is the software and the codes, and it's not so much for the much smaller ones, it's not necessarily all the vehicle technologies, it's really about the smarts on the vehicle to talk to each other to behave safely. Great. Yeah, so hopefully by now you've kind of picked up on the fact that, as Dave said, we've got centers all across the country, and we kind of take these big problems and divide them up into chunks that are complementary. And we've got the workforce deployed of about 16,000 civil servants across the various centers, and yep, about twice that many contractors supporting us directly. Really working in a very coherent and teamwork is the key here, right? So let's get a little bit deeper into this subject. This is really one that I find fascinating as a pilot, right? Because for all those of us who have had a near miss or a glider that's not got a transponder or something, we're pretty conscious about what a challenge this is, really, right? So one of the terms that keeps popping up is UTM. So can you tell us a little bit more what the difference between UAS, UTM, kind of split that out for us,
so
Tom?
We call UTM, it's the traffic management system as opposed to the vehicle itself. And what we're trying to do is prototype that system. Ultimately, we're agnostic about the business model. It could be a government-run type of system. It could also be privately operated. Essentially, it's a service. And the way that a UAS operator would access the service is by developing a flight plan, a mission that they want to fly, and then registering it with a UTM server that aggregates all the flight plans for a given piece of geographical airspace. And that system then would deconflict all the requested flight plans. If you register a flight plan into UTM that is in conflict with somebody else who's already had a plan accepted, the system will simply give you an interface back saying, you can't fly that plan, but here are some tools for you to figure out what plan you can fly, either adjusting the route or the time or some combination of those things. So what we're hoping to do with all the partners that are working with us on this is to prototype a system, demonstrate that it works, that it's safe, has all the reliability built into it, and then transfer that so that there can be an independent operator that allows the airspace to be accessible by UAS operators anywhere.
So we could expect many of those users may not even be pilots, right? There may be businesses of various kind that operate in the airspace.
Absolutely. Yeah. Amazon and Google are two of our biggest partners right now. They're very interested in this.
Yeah, that's exciting.